Hope you're enjoying your Friday and that you're looking forward to a great weekend. Make sure that you're with your brothers and sisters in Christ at your home congregation on the Lord's Day. If you don't have a home congregation, go out and do your research and find a place. Get plugged in there. Stay plugged in there. All of us need that. If you are actively looking for a place and you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East Building, we extend to you our usual invitation. Come check us out. Maybe we'll be the place you'll settle down. Let's go ahead and open our Bibles back to the book of Isaiah, chapter number 7. Remember that this is all happening in 734 BC by my chronology. So roughly 11 years before northern Israel ceases to exist as an independent nation. They have a young king, Ahaz. He's 20. He's just seized control from his father, Jotham. Jotham was a good guy. Ahaz, not so much. He's a bad guy. And so very quickly, things turn against Ahaz. And God sends the prophet Isaiah, a brand new prophet. He just apparently started this year as a prophet, to not just simply confront Ahaz in a crisis moment, but to offer him the chance to trust God. Northern Israel and the kingdom of Damascus, otherwise known as Syria, have joined forces, and they have moved against southern Judah, against Ahaz in particular. They've invaded his land. They've taken people captive. They killed a whole bunch of people. And they're threatening Jerusalem itself. Apparently, their plan is to replace Ahaz with a puppet ruler and evidently kill him in the process. So God sends Isaiah to young Ahaz with an offer. Ask any sign, and God will do it to prove to you that he can be trusted. And Ahaz doesn't want to play, because Ahaz is a bad guy. But the offer needs to be made, and it becomes the backdrop for one of our famous Christmas passages. And we're so caught up in the Christmas fulfillment of this passage, I think we sometimes miss out on the double meaning that impacts on this time period we're looking at in the 8th century BC. So Isaiah chapter 7, quick review, verse 10. Again, he who is spoke to Ahaz, through Isaiah, understand, ask a sign of he who is your God, let it be as deep as Sheol or high as heaven. But Ahaz said, I'm not going to ask. I'm not going to put Yahweh to the test. I'm not going to be dealing with him. And Isaiah said, hear then, O house of David. Is it too little for you to weary men that you also weary my God? So you've already put a lot of people's noses out of joint around you by seizing control from your dad, by engaging in paganism. Now you're going to get right in God's face and refuse to have anything to do with him? So then he says this, verse 14, the famous passage. Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. You know, whether you ask for it or not, you're going to get this. Behold, the virgin, which the Hebrew of this passage has betula, which can mean a young woman, whether she's married or unmarried. But the Greek Old Testament translation here has parthia, I think is the word. And it means a virgin, as in unmarried, never had sexual activity. And so I believe that Greek Old Testament translation of the Hebrew intends to show the contextual meaning here. That The prediction is someone who's never been married, never had sexual activity, is going to conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Immanuel, which means God is with us. The fulfillment that we see in the New Testament, highlighted by Matthew the Apostle, is that this is about Mary's impregnation by the Holy Spirit, and that she was a virgin. She ends up having a baby boy by supernatural means, and that's why the boy is called the Son of God. Now, Immanuel in that context means God himself is coming down to be with us. We understand that. That is a Christian principle revolving around the virgin birth. But for the Israelis, the Judeans, hearing this, their minds probably would have been, God is on our side. Verse 15, now we start getting into the near context. He shall eat curds and honey. There's a reason for that that comes up later. When he knows to refuse the evil and to choose the good. So when he starts thinking on his own. So we're talking elementary age. But before the boy knows how to refuse the evil and choose the good, the land whose two kings you dread will be deserted. So basically, Ahaz, before the boy that's about to be conceived and born is old enough to make up his own choices regarding good and evil, Pekah of northern Israel and Rezin of Damascus are going to be gone. So you're worrying about these guys for nothing. Verse 17, he who is will bring upon you and upon your people and upon your father's house such days as have not come since the day that Ephraim departed from Judah, the king of Assyria. And so now we get the big warning. Ahaz, there is coming a really bad guy for the Israeli people. He is the king of Assyria, Tiglath-Pileser III, and he is bringing God's judgment. It'll be some of the worst judgment that's happened in the last 200 years. That's approximately how long it's been since Israel and Judah split from one another. And then comes this. In that day, he who is will whistle for the fly that's at the end of the streams of Egypt. So he's going to bring some judgment from the south. Pharaoh's going to get into the mix pretty soon. And for the bee that is in the land of Assyria, and they will all come and settle in the steep ravines and the clefts of the rocks and on all the thorn bushes and on all the pastures. So the Israeli homelands are going to end up being invaded repeatedly by foreigners over the next 150 years and will eventually be occupied by foreigners. Verse 21, in that day, a man will keep alive a young cow and two sheep, and because of the abundance of milk that they give, he'll eat curds, for everyone who's left in the land will eat curds and honey. So the prediction is there's going to be a lot of milk and cheese consumed in this period that's coming up. And that's why earlier it was talking about before the kid eats curds and milk, before he starts making that his normal food intake, then these guys are going to be gone. Verse 23, this is where we had to drop off last time, but I wanted to get the full context before we hit it. In that day, meaning the day of the invasions, the day of the occupation. In that day, every place where there used to be 1,000 vines, so 1,000 individual grapevines, worth 1,000 shekels of silver. And so each vine apparently is worth a shekel. That's a couple of days' wages. So between $400 and $500 by our buying standards today for the common workaday person. So $500,000 worth of vineyard. That will become briars and thorns. So there won't be anybody taking care of these perennial, valuable plants. And so they're going to be overtaken by briars and thistles. Verse 24, with bows and arrows, a man will come there, for all the land will be briars and thorns. So a very expensive, profitable vineyard is going to turn into a wild zone where people go to hunt. And as for all the hills that used to be hoed with a hoe, you're not going to come there for fear of briars and thorns, but they will become a place where cattle are let loose and where sheep tread. So cultivated areas, because there won't be any people around, will suddenly go back to wild areas, places that you'd let your cattle free range. Chapter number 8, we will save for just a moment. We need to talk about Ahaz's response to this prophecy from Isaiah. And it's not good. It is found in 2 Chronicles 28, starting at verse number 16. So he's been warned by God. You need to trust God, and he can save you. He can save Judah. He can protect you. But if you don't, and I think we can put in parentheses here, and we know you won't, then the king of Assyria is going to come down, and it'll be the beginning of all sorts of trouble for people descended from Israel, that is, from Jacob. Verse number 16 of 2 Chronicles 28. At that time, King Ahaz sent to the king of Assyria for help. So the 20-year-old usurper of his father's throne, facing all of these difficulties, decides to ask for assistance, not from God, but from the very king that Isaiah warned him would cause trouble, Tiglath-Pileser III. And here is some of the other things that were going on as to why King Ahaz was panicking and felt he needed a strong man. Verse 17, for the Edomites had again invaded and defeated Judah and carried away captives. You might remember we have had problems with the Edomites in the past, where they invaded Judah, did sneak attacks, and did all sorts of damage, captured people, sold them as slaves on the open market. And so here they are back again, causing trouble. They're the southeast neighbors of Judah. And then, verse 18, the Philistines have made raids on the cities in the Shephelah. That's the transition zone from the coastal plain up to the hill country in the central area of Judah. And in the Negev of Judah, that's the desert that starts south of Hebron and Beersheba. And it's the northern part of the Sinai Desert. And had taken Beth Shemesh, Aijalon, Gerot, Soko with its villages, Timnah with its villages, Gimzo with its villages, and they settled there. So the Philistines, who are the western neighbors of Judah and had once been subjugated or once been tributary to the kingdom of Judah, they are now attacking the western and southern fringes of the Judah kingdom and taking the property over, occupying it. And here's the reason why. Verse 19, for he who is had humbled Judah because of Ahaz, king of Israel, for he had made Judah act sinfully and had been very unfaithful to he who is. So the reason these bad things are happening is not just bad luck, it's not randomness. It is that God has said, as he warned in the past, if you don't keep the covenant with me, I will invoke the curses. And one of the big curses is I will break down all of my protections of your promised land. And I will allow the strong peoples around you to come in and take things and take people. Well, we already know that Ahaz has made his mind up that he needs the strong man Tiglath-Pileser to save him. And so Tiglath-Pileser agrees for a price. Verse 20. So Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, came against him and afflicted him instead of strengthening him. Now, don't misunderstand that. Tiglath-Pileser does not come down and attack Ahaz. He's going to come down and attack Rezin in Syria. He's going to attack Pekah in the country of northern Israel. He's going to attack the Ammonites and the Moabites and the Edomites, as was prophesied in the book of Amos that we had not too long ago. And he's going to attack the Philistines, as was prophesied in the book of Amos. But he's also going to subjugate Judah. He is going to make Judah his puppet, his tributary. And Ahaz is going to be that puppet. And so that's why Tiglath-Pileser actually comes against him and afflicts him instead of just strengthening him. He uses him as a resource rather than backs him up like an ally. And no surprise, because this is a transactional relationship. Verse 21 tells us, "For Ahaz took a portion from the house of he who is, and the house of the king and of the princes, and he gave tribute to the king of Assyria, but it didn't help him." So Ahaz tries to buy the assistance of Tiglath-Pileser III to get him out of this mess that he's in because of his own sin. At this point, let's go back to Isaiah, chapter number 8. So keep in mind that Ahaz has bribed Tiglath-Pileser with a whole bunch of temple and palace treasury items, but Tiglath has not arrived yet. Isaiah chapter 8, verse 1. "Then he who is said to me," so this is Isaiah's testimony, "take a large tablet and write on it in common characters, belonging to Maher Shalal Hashbaz." So get yourself a little writing tablet, probably a wax writing tablet that's reusable. And so he writes on it, "This tablet belongs to Maher Shalal Hashbaz." Now, in Hebrew, that literally means "the spoil speeds, the prey hastens." But I want you to understand it in its symbolic meaning. It means, hey, our goodies are getting away. The people that are under our attack are getting away. Get them. And so this is going to be kind of the representation of how quickly the Assyrians come down and just take things over, because they're all about the goodies. They're all about the resources. Remember, I told you that the Assyrians, very much like Nazis, they think they are the supreme humanity made by their god, Ashur. Everybody else is just there to be used. So he writes on this tablet, "This tablet belongs to get the goodies. They're almost getting away," right? Verse 2, "And I will get reliable witnesses, Uriah the priest and Zechariah the son of Jeberechiah, to attest for me." So he's going to have two witnesses. One of them is the priest, to bear witness to his testimony about what's about to occur. There is a prophetic element to this tablet. Verse 3. So I went to the prophetess, and she conceived and bore a son. Now we know that Isaiah already has one son, and therefore had already been married. But the speculation is, and I believe it's correct, is that that first wife died at some point either during or after the birth of their son. And so Isaiah is a young widower. And so at God's direction, he gets married again to a virgin woman who also happens to be a prophetess. This is important to the prophecy that we saw in Isaiah chapter 7. So he says, I went into my new wife, I went into the prophetess, the virgin prophetess. She ends up getting pregnant, and she gives birth to a son. And then he who is said to me, call his name Mahershalal Hashbaz, the same name that was written on the tablet. Verse 4, for before the boy knows how to cry, Avi, which means my father, or Emi, which means my mama, the wealth of Damascus and the spoil of Samaria will be carried away before the king of Assyria. So basically, in probably 734, the same year that Ahaz had been given the opportunity to trust God, and the Isaiah 7:14 prophecy about the virgin-born child was made, Isaiah remarries, his wife gets pregnant, and the next year, 733, they have a baby, little baby boy, Mahershalal Hashbaz. And he is not up walking and talking before Tiglath-Pileser arrives and puts an end to the troublemakers, first in Damascus, that'd be Rezin, and then in Samaria, that would be Pekah. Verse number 5. He who is spoke to me again. Because this people, meaning the Israeli people as a whole, not just northern Israel, but also southern Judah, because this people has refused the waters of Shiloh that flow gently, and this is the waters of peacefulness. It is it's emblematic of God's living water, Him being the source of peace. And so because they've refused God's water, and instead they rejoice over Rezin, the son of Remaliah, and the son of Remaliah, which is Pekah, therefore behold, the Lord is bringing against them the waters of the river, mighty and many, the king of Assyria and all his glory. So you see the symbolism here. Israel had the peaceful waters of God offered to them. And instead, they were looking out for human sources of refreshment. And they're going to end up with the raging waters of the Euphrates, Mesopotamia, in the form of Tiglath-Pileser III. And it's going to be bad. It will rise over all its channels and will go over all its banks. So not only is it a rough river, it is a flooding, raging river. And it's going to sweep over into Judah. So it's going to hit northern Israel first, but it's also going to flood over into southern Judah. It will overflow and pass on, reaching even to the neck, and its outspread wings will fill the breadth of your land, O Emmanuel. and again, this idea of the reaching to the neck, that's kind of an image of overflowing. And outspreading the wings, the Assyrian people often represented their god Ashur with a winged solar disk. And so the Assyrians with their winged god is coming down, and it's going to spread its wings over all of your land, going to take you over. And you'll notice God calls Judah in particular the land of God is with you. God is with us, Emmanuel. But they've kind of blown that off by not trusting him because they're following Ahaz's lead. Be broken, you peoples, be shattered. Give ear, all you far countries. Strap on your armor and be shattered. Strap on your armor and be shattered. Take counsel together, but it'll come to nothing. Speak a word, but it will not stand, for God is with us. So there is a prophecy kind of encapsulated here of eventually the prophecy of Isaiah 7:14 will come to pass, that God will turn the tables and all the enemies of God's people will be the ones that will be broken. They will be the ones that it won't do them any good how strong they are. Doesn't matter how many plans they make. They are going to be broken by the reality that Emmanuel is with Israel. And of course, that is Jesus Christ. And I think there is an element here in these two verses regarding the second coming of Jesus, that the tables will be fully turned at that point. Just think about the imagery in Revelation chapter 19, where Jesus is pictured as the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Well, we've run out of time. Mark your place. We'll get back into this next time God gives us a chance to get into the Word.